Today on Vulnerable, I get a chance to speak with the wonderful Alina K. Roby. She's an independent missionary who works with Shade for Children on the ground in Western Ukraine. I've met her on social media and was instantly touched by her work, and I was more than honored to have her on and to chat with her about her reality. And please, I do encourage you to seek out someone like Alina, if it is not her, to try to be charitable and help, because winter is coming and it's going to be really hard for them to get resources and to stay warm.
I'm Christy Carlson Romano, and this is the Vulnerable Podcast.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm super excited to be having a conversation with you.
Oh, gosh. And I'm actually so super excited to be having a conversation with you.
Christy, I have to get this out in the front end.
Do it. Get it out.
I'm going to fangirl just a little bit.
Because you should.
I was your audience.
Amazing.
I was the prime age for Kim Possible, Even Stevens, Cadet Kelly. So
okay.
I was your audience, and I adored you growing up.
Oh,
so
cool.
This is really cool for me.
But like, can we just say like how cool social media is in this day and age, and like how it connects us? I mean, literally, I'm speaking to you. It's evening in the Ukraine right now where you are. Yeah. And we've met through me, I guess, stalking you or following you, and then sort of hoping to hear back from you, honestly, because, you know, I may have done things that you grew up watching, but like I'm watching you now. Mm-hmm. And for me, what you're doing is extremely impactful to me as an adult versus anything that I'd done, which is impactful for you as a, you know, as a young person. But wow, how cool.
It is very cool. And I actually, the moment that I got your message about coming on the podcast, I was with one of my friends and I was like, if I could like go back in time and tell 10-year-old Lena that she's going to get to have a conversation with Kim Possible, like she would have lost her mind and probably not believed me. But yeah, this like feels kind of like a full circle moment.
I'm loving
it. As I like reflect on how I got here and then just get to talk to someone who I so admired and looked up to as a kid. Like, I don't know. It is really cool. And we live in such a weird small world.
It's such a weird small world. And that's the truth, right? Is that we are really just so connected. And I think that our millennial space, our era, if you want to call it, I think we're learning how to live less isolated by just reaching out to people that we have common interests or goals or want to support and show support. So for those of you who are listening to Vulnerable today, I have Miss Alina here, and we are chatting with her from Ukraine, and she is on the ground there where she does amazing work with orphanages and also an NGO and a charity, and we'll get into that. And so she's been posting on TikTok pieces of how she's working with orphanages and with orphans and certain people who have been divided from their families and are waiting to be reunited and all stages of that. And she's been very helpful and very nurturing. And it's wonderful to see the content because I think it brings us closer to the realities of what's happening around us and not just the, you know, what is it, like a 6-inch phone in front of our face. So please talk to me about, like, basically just introduce yourself, I guess, tell us who you are and how you've come to not just the missionary work part of it, but like what has brought you and called you into working with children and writing a children's book, I should say, too.
Yeah, those things felt very disconnected at one point in my life, but have, like I said, so many things come full circle. But yeah, my name's Alina. I have lived in Ukraine for 10 months now.
Wow.
I actually moved here a full 23 days before the full-scale invasion started. I didn't move here like in response to the potential of that happening. It's been a plan of mine for years. It was just, some might say terrible timing, some might say perfect timing, but it has been an incredible year. I never imagined that war would be a part of my experience. I think we are so disconnected from it in the US that any type of conflict like this just is something that we see at a distance. but it has been an honor to come alongside the Ukrainian people in this incredible time of need and fight, and just to be able to witness and be a very, very small part of this really incredible and important part of history. So I appreciate you just giving me the opportunity to shed more light on it and talk about it. I didn't think that orphan care or missionary work was actually going to be a part of my journey up until about maybe 4 years ago, but it makes so much sense now for me, looking back on all of the little parts of my life that have led me to this moment and to this where I'm at and what I'm doing. I definitely had an adverse childhood, as I've learned to define it through therapy, where, yeah, my reality was different than I think would have been ideal or would have been the most nurturing.
Got it.
And I think what I learned through that of being exposed to a lot of really adult concepts at a really, really young age is that simply children are vulnerable to the decisions of the adults around them. And I was a result of that. My childhood was not ideal, and it was really difficult, and it was nothing that was under my control. It was all a result.
Were you in foster care at one point?
I was not, okay. But I would say that I lived a life that could have very easily led there. I lived with my grandparents for several years, and had they not been in my life and a part of what was going on in my family, then I think that could have been an end result for me. And I'm so thankful for the people I had in my life who protected me, who advocated for me. And so much about my life could have been different had I not had that. But I did learn from an early age that there is so much out of your control. And you just have to figure out whether you're going to let these things break you, harden you, or if you can remain soft in them and you can let them empower you and encourage you and guide you. And wow. I don't know, I can't tell you the moment in time where I was decided not to let the experiences of my life harden me. I think a part of that was just my nature. I have a very empathetic nature. I was a very, very emotional child. I cried.
You say that like it's a bad thing, you know?
It's not. It's not. And I know that now. I know that now, but I didn't know it then. I hated it about myself then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't let it harden me the way it very well could have. And I think it was that experience, being able through some miracle to remain soft and empathetic through it, led me to this deep desire to be that advocate for other children that are simply just living lives that are a result of decisions that were made by the adults in their lives. And that's what I see here, working within the orphan care system here in Ukraine. These kids are as vulnerable as it gets to the world. And especially in a country that's at war, it just increases the level of vulnerability that they have. And so, yeah, that's what led me here. I don't think I would have said that when I was actually making the decisions to pursue working within orphan care or even moving to Ukraine. But just throughout this year of really reflecting of how did I end up here? I'll go out on my patio and look out on my view of Ukraine, and there'll be air raid sirens going off, and I'll be how did I end up here?
I bet.
And it's through asking myself that question many, many times that I realized it was because in my childhood, I didn't let myself go hard to what I saw in the world. And instead I let it create this empathy for others that were experiencing that.
This is beautiful because when we think of, firstly, I can relate to the hardness concept, to the, I think we would call it a loss of innocence, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's that concept of magic and wholesomeness and joy, unadulterated joy.
Yeah.
I think that's why there's so many Disney adults. You know, people who love to go to the parks and wear the ears and,
absolutely.
You know, there's a whole economy behind that now. But in essence of what the basis of that is it's people who've had trauma and still, you know, they need that fix of wholesomeness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the same token, we're talking about getting hard. And I remember was like, when I was young, I felt the same way. I was like, I don't want to lose this part of me. How do I keep it? And for me, I ended up projecting what I thought hard was. So I tried to dress tougher, talk tougher, be tougher. And it led me down some really dark roads. So it's so wonderful to see the different roads people take with that same struggle. And also like with hardness, when we talk about hardness, that's not what hardness actually is. Because what you're doing is hard. It takes a resilience and a strength. That is, doesn't mean that you have to let go of the softness, right? Can you speak to that? Like how you've found resilience in this?
Yeah, I think when I say hard, I think what I mean is like, and I did do this. There was a significant period of my life where I did do this. But by being hard, I block myself off from like the real authentic feelings, emotions. And when that happens, when you harden yourself to those things and you block them off, then you can't be activated by them and you can't be changed by them and you can't be transformed by them because you're just closing yourself off to it, right?
Do you have an example by chance?
Yeah, I would say.
You're so wise. Teach me your ways.
I think that this is, I'm not trying to skirt around my story where it's like, I'm not going to tell you like the whole drama of it all, but it's okay. I also have learned that a lot of this story, and for the reason that I said of like, it's the decisions of the adults in my life that kind of led to this, isn't always fully mine to tell. So I tried to do a good job of just telling my side of the story without exposing everyone else's side of the story.
Of course.
But I think an example of that is I had a pretty significant moment where my relationship with my father was disconnected. He was essentially removed from my life and it was disconnected. Mm-hmm. And I could have very easily, and I actually think to some degree I did, and we've had to work through this over the years now that I am an adult that actually understands what was happening and all of the consequences of what was happening. Whereas when I was an 8-year-old child, my mind and my heart and my emotions could not wrap around it. Mm-hmm. And so I closed myself off for a while to the potential of a relationship with my dad because I didn't want to be hurt again. I didn't want to feel that disconnect happen again, that removal happen again, some of the rejection that I feel like maybe came from that as well. So closing myself off to that. And just grew hard in thinking, I don't need that type of relationship in my life. And you'll even, if you like had a snippet or a snapshot of my life during those years, I was so close to my mom during those years. And it was because I was overcompensating. I didn't have a strong relationship with like an adult male figure in my life when my dad was removed from the picture. And so I overcompensated in this like really strong and in some ways unhealthy attachment to my mom, that I would have severe anxiety if I couldn't be around her. And even just like for times of like being at school and things like that, there was a severe anxiety. And so as an adult, and I would say I probably really started working on this in high school, but being able to open myself and remain soft to the emotions and the desires to have a relation, like a male relationship, whether that be with my father or just like any male, that's something I've really had to like work through and overcome. And that's what I mean by that is like, if I closed off those emotions completely, then I don't think I ever really would have had redemption or any type of healing in that. And it would continue to have consequences in my relationships to come.
Absolutely. Yeah, resilience is such a gift from your higher power. Mm-hmm. Identifying that you have that strength within you and that it doesn't come from the validation of others. And it's interesting that you had done that as young as your like high school years, because for me, I'm just taking it on now. I'm just scraping away the scar tissue of acting tough from my 20s to start to understand that I can be resilient. And you know what I mean? So I look to people like you and say, my gosh, like you're there in such a raw, vulnerable place. And yet you're, well, but let's get into it, because I'm sure it's affecting parts of you. And so how are you doing?
That's a really interesting question.
Has anyone asked you that lately? Can I hug you?
I do actually get asked a lot. And it's nice to be asked in a setting like this, because this is a setting where you're like, genuinely, we have time to like flesh it out, right?
Yeah,
we do. When you get asked how you're doing, just like in passing, then you're just like, well, do you have a couple hours? But yeah, I mean, it's been a tough year. It's been a tough life. I mean, I think most of us can say that, right? Like, and this year has been really, I think, particularly interesting for me and my journey emotionally, mentally, physically, because living in Ukraine, doing the work that I do, well, one, I work with children who have horrible stories. And there's this concept of like trauma stewardship that I've had to kind of figure out, because I get exposed to other people's trauma, specifically children. And I get to figure out how to hold that well, without carrying it, without to be triggered or to lose myself in what I'm experiencing, witnessing through others. And then two, I am experiencing my own new levels of trauma living in a country that's at war. And it's taken me even probably to this point to be able to admit that I'm having those experiences, because it feels weird for me to say that because my family's not here. I haven't been directly attacked. My city hasn't been directly attacked, and I haven't lost everything. And there's so many people who have lost so much here. So it's taken me a while to be able to admit that I also am experiencing levels of trauma just by being here. And the interesting thing about that kind of ties through my whole line of my story is that being here and having like the moments where I feel unsafe or scared or fearful have brought up and dug up emotions from my past, because like my mind and like my nervous system and my body is reminded of this feeling of like unsafety. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I'm taken back to, you know, when I was a child or college years, like times when I also have felt like this. Mm-hmm. And so I've had to, what I feel like is the most inconvenient time, had to kind of delve up some of these old traumas and trauma responses and wounds that I've gotten to rework through and revisit, just because I'm in a setting where I sometimes feel unsafe again or I feel triggered.
When you see the kids and when you're able to bond with them, I'm assuming you speak their language, right?
I am learning their language. Okay. Luckily, Christy, I pretty much work with children who are like 2-3 year olds and then children with special needs. So my level of Ukrainian is enough to communicate with them.
That's so beautiful, though. That truly is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. This is blowing my mind. Not only are you full circling in our conversation, full circling mm-hmm. in life while also enduring new trauma, mm-hmm. you're able to bond with these and learn their language and be there for them. Wow, that's just so, and so, yeah, okay. But how does it feel to connect with them? Like, does it make it worth your while, so to speak?
There is truly nothing I would rather be doing with my life right now. Like, there is not a point in this earth, there is not a job I'd rather be working. When I say I'm working my dream job, like, I mean that to the fullest extent. Like, I'm not being dramatic. I love what I get to do. It is so challenging, but it is so worthwhile and so fruitful that I truly wouldn't want to be anywhere else. Like, they make everything make no sense and all the sense at the same time. Like, I get to wrestle with all of like the existential crisis of like, why, how could this be happening with them? But I also get to be reminded of like how pure and beautiful and exciting and joyful children are, and mm-hmm. like the hope and the expectancy that they have in their life. And that's what really drives me forward, because like you said about resilience and like, where do we get that? Where do we muster that up? And I think for me, it is in like the hope that we can do better as a society, as a world, as humans. Like, I'm a Christian. I'm motivated by my faith. And when I like work with these children, I am motivated every single day that we can be doing better for these children, that we can see a brighter future, that there can be more good in the world tomorrow than there is today, based on the decisions that we make and the way that we pour out our love.
And also for them to experience your love, Christian or otherwise, right? But right, to experience your love, to have your resilience role modeled, because all they're doing is seeing what's around them. And by the way, like, the more I delve into my own interests in terms of childhood traumas and stuff, and the more I'm mm-hmm. learning about it with books like What Happened to You, which I've mentioned several mm-hmm. times, you know, trauma can start very, very early, but so can the resilience factor. So mm-hmm. can the role modeling of having the advocacy around them. Those are the mm-hmm. the grains of truth, you know, for them to hold on to, whether subconscious or not. And that's really a beautiful thing that you're offering them. Can we go into the specifics of your work? Was it Shade?
Shade for Children, yeah.
Okay, great. Okay. But it's not an NGO, right?
It is. So Shade for Children is an NGO that's based here in Ukraine. There's also a U.S. nonprofit side of it as well. But that organization is how I first got introduced into orphan care here in Ukraine.
Got it. And so Shade for Children, it's in the U.S. It's there as well. Mm-hmm. Had you written your children's book before deciding to do this, or what happened?
Yeah, my children's book was actually, it happened in college. I was a creative writing minor, and my mentor in college said, hey, I work with this publishing group and we want to branch into children's book. Do you want to write us a children's book?
Yeah.
And I was like, absolutely, I do. And so that's where that came from. It's completely disconnected. But I actually was able to have brought a copy here with me and like have it with the kids. So that's pretty cool. But I didn't know that when I wrote that I was then going to be reading it to small children in Ukraine.
What's the story about?
It's actually a retelling of an African folklore about the sun and the moon, and how the sun and the moon went to live their destinies of ruling the day and the night. It's a really sweet little story, but it's based on an African folklore story.
That's awesome. Okay, so you put your application in, or how did you hear about Shade?
So I came to Ukraine for the first time in 2018, and I came as a part of a bigger missions trip. I went on this missions trip called the World Race. You visit 11 countries over the course of 11 months. And essentially, you get the opportunity to be exposed to multiple types of missions work, NGO work, nonprofit work, humanitarian work. It's like ranges everything from like very church focused to very like humanitarian focused. But I was on that trip. I came to Ukraine as a part of that trip and got connected with Shade for Children while I was here. And Shade for Children's not some big massive organization that has like all these employees. It is a husband and a wife team. The husband is American. He married a Ukrainian woman. And they have just been, for like the last 10 years, been advocating for Ukrainian children all throughout Ukraine, but primarily here in the West where I live. And so I got connected with them, and they were doing something within orphan care that I hadn't seen in other parts of the world where I had got to kind of experience this a little bit, because their motivation wasn't just meeting the immediate need of the child, like in this moment. Their motivation was really reform within the orphan care system here in Ukraine, which is like desperately needed. And so they were working like very closely with like the social services, the directors of the orphanage, really trying to get kids in a position where they could be removed from the institution and put into families, whether that's through reunification, adoption, or foster care. And there's just not a lot of people doing that. There's not a lot of people advocating for these children in that way. So when I saw that and got to experience that in 2018, that was when the light went off for me. And I was like, when I saw the need, I saw that there was not enough people that were kind of serving in this role. And two, I saw a like heart connection that I had with this place and these people and these children that I could not deny. It's the closest thing that I think I have to falling in love. I just like fell in love with Ukraine and the people and this type of care.
You were truly called. Why I ended up here.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it was like a calling, a higher power or something speaking to you in some way?
Absolutely. Within 3 days of me being in Ukraine, like Ukraine was not on my radar at all. I had traveled through Europe a little bit when I was in college. I studied abroad for a semester and had traveled through Europe, but Ukraine was not on my radar. I didn't know anything about it, its history, its people, its language. But within 3 days of being in country, I looked to my friend and I said, I think I'm going to move to Ukraine. And she was like, what? Like, we just got here. And I was like, I know, isn't that crazy? And as I kept saying it out loud to like more people or like my mom, the more true it just felt.
I bet your mom, what was your mom's reaction?
Okay, my mom is like so much cooler than I think. She's never told me no for anything that I have dreamed up or wanted to do. She's always just been like, yeah, of course. Like, yeah. She's incredible. And she has always like seen me doing bigger things than I ever could have imagined for myself. So any idea that I've had or thrown out there, she's been like, okay. So I don't think she was surprised at all. And yeah, it definitely does feel like I know that this was my purpose in life. This is what I was created to do. I feel like God has orchestrated so many things in my life that have actually equipped me to be in this role, like life experience that's equipped me beyond a degree or, you know, a certain path of study.
Right.
Like I said, I don't know what else I would be doing with my life if it wasn't this. Nothing else makes sense the way that this does.
The kids don't necessarily need you to be a doctor for you to be helpful. Mm-hmm. They need your arms and your closeness and your smell and your warmth. And so what do you do with the kids?
Yeah. So my time here is kind of split up into a couple different categories. So I do have the direct contact time that I have with the kids. So there's one orphanage that I primarily go to in a village outside of the city where I live. And at this orphanage, there's about 120 kids that live there total. But I work specifically with two of the groups that make up about 35 children. That doesn't feel like much. And even when I say it, I'm like, that's not very many children. But in order for me to be able to have like that one-on-one time and to like get to know these children and build relationships and have them like me be a role in their life where they trust me and can rely on me, it can't really be more than that. And so I split up my afternoons between these two groups. And it's a little different every day, but you know, sometimes we're playing with Play-Doh. Sometimes we're practicing our colors and our numbers. Sometimes we're just outside and we're running around and they're going crazy. And I love those days because they don't feel like they get a whole lot of them. And like yesterday, we built like piled up leaves because it's very much fall here right now. We piled up leaves and like trampled through all the leaves and threw them up. And we had dirt in our hair and everything. And it was so much fun. But yeah, I just get to be with them and love them and care for them in whatever they might need in that day. And sometimes it's just me with one of them. Sometimes it's me with the whole group, with the other caregivers that like actually work for the orphanage. But that's what I get to do 4 days a week. So I go there Monday, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays that I get to spend with them. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of my time is spent either like working within like the advocacy sector of my mission or what I feel like I'm called to do. So I am, you know, creating content for my Instagram, my TikTok. That like really just kind of landed in my lap. I was not really expecting to have platforms like I wanted to have platforms for this, but I did not expect to have them so quickly. But when the war started, I was, by the grace of God, given this following. Mm-hmm. And so I've been able to have like really, really awesome conversations with people about Ukrainian orphan crisis, about the process for international adoption, just about, you know, everything that's wrapped up in this. And so advocating on that sector and then also kind of advocating more behind the scenes. And I do this through several relationships that I have here in Ukraine, but talking with social workers here about a specific child's case, you know, whether they're stuck in the system, you know, there should be getting towards adoption status, or, you know, where's the family? Is there options for reunification? What does the family need? If that is an option, can we help provide some of the needs for this family? Is it education? Like, are they worried about education? A lot of times parents will put their children into the orphan care system here because they don't feel like their child can get a good education otherwise.
Really?
Which is really, yeah, it's a really
That's
unfortunate
really
misconception.
Oh my gosh. So they sacrifice, well, and forgive my ignorance here, but there's not like a class system per se, like we have in America, middle, upper, and lower, right? It's probably different. So
there is, but it is different.
I was going to say, but what is the type of family that would sacrifice their relationship with their child so that they could get an education? That seems so devastating.
This is the tough thing whenever I'm really dissecting it in my own brain and having conversations about this, because we come from a culture where that would be like the worst case scenario, right? Like surrendering your child, having, you know, your child go into foster care in the U.S. That's like
there's
worst
so much
case
pride
scenario.
Involved with that too.
Yeah,
like it's to give your child up is it's a dangerous risk too.
Here, there's a different mentality around that, where there's this mentality that the orphan care system, the government caring for the children, isn't the worst case scenario. And that oftentimes the government can do a better job caring for, especially children with like special needs and things like that, than can happen in the home. And this is simply just misinformation. And a lot of this ties back to Soviet era thinking and mentalities, where like historically, when Ukraine was tied to the Soviet Union, so many things, so many aspects of their life was government run, and they were taught to believe that that was what was in their best interest. And Ukraine is only 31 years post being tied and under the Soviet Union. And so many of those mentalities remain, that it's government's responsibility for this and that. And unfortunately, childcare has really fallen under that. And I think there's been moves towards reform. And I would say there's a big portion of the population that would say that that's not their mentality anymore. But there's still a big portion of the population that just is.
It's a through line.
Yeah.
It's an antiquated through line.
Exactly.
It's kind of like with here, where we have our generational trauma, things that we're breaking from, like our mm-hmm. families and the things we endured, how we're not doing it with our kids. Like, your emotions are a good thing. That's interesting. That's very interesting. And then there was also a Romanian orphan crisis as well. Wasn't there in the 90s?
Well, pretty much any Eastern European country and any country that's been tied under the Soviet Union, like Russia also has an orphan crisis. And all of these countries throughout, where Romania and other countries outside of Ukraine have kind of the leg up, is that Romania is already a part of the EU, the European Union. And so part of the path in order to become part of that Western world, join the European Union, is to deinstitutionalize your children. So institutions really don't exist in the more developed areas of the world, especially Western Europe, like they have existed here in Eastern Europe. And so, yes, Romania absolutely experienced this. And I think we could take a lot of examples from how Romania was able to deinstitutionalize their children. But I know that they ran into some other, you know, you kind of open a can of worms and you kind of reveal all of these other issues when you just try to close all the orphanages. So what I would love to see happen within my lifetime, if possible, is a true heart shift, a true mentality shift, where families feel equipped to care for their children and to keep them in home, and communities feel equipped to support those families that are at risk, that are vulnerable. So where the responsibility doesn't fall on the government to keep these children alive, because genuinely that's the only thing that these institutions are doing, is keeping them alive. And really just equip those families to where we can have family units stay together. And when that happens, then we're going to see stronger communities, we're going to see a stronger government, and we're going to see Ukraine really flourish in the beauty of everything that makes this culture so rich, so vibrant, so strong, the way that the world is seeing them now.
Wow, that's amazing. So how has your day-to-day life changed since the Russian invasion and the continued war, which I know is not been hitting you guys, but I'm assuming that you've probably seen some people come in.
Yeah.
From those different areas, right?
Yeah. I mean, 100%. My city and my region is probably one of the highest intake of internally displaced people from other regions in Ukraine. So we have so many people here right now. One of the first things that I got to be a part of when the invasion first started was helping set up IDP, which is internally displaced people shelters. So we helped convert a church here in the city completely into a shelter. So we were bringing in mattresses, we were purchasing sheets, we were buying food, completely converting this church into being a shelter for these people. Yeah, it was just, because the first few weeks, it was just crazy. Like, I think back on those weeks and I don't know how any of us did it. Like, we never ate, we never slept. We were running purely on adrenaline and coffee for weeks and weeks. And we were just doing whatever we could to meet whatever need was presented. And hour by hour, minute by minute, it seemed like there was more needs that were coming up. There were more people coming in. We needed beds. We needed, like, I gave up my apartment multiple times so that families could come stay in my apartment, and I went and stayed on a friend's couch because the need was just so palpable in every moment. And yeah, so it's transparent to everything about me as a person and my day-to-day life, if I'm going to be totally honest.
Yeah, please.
We are definitely back to some level of normalcy here. We figured out, like, in the early weeks of the war, of the full-scale invasion, we didn't know what to expect. We didn't know how far they would come. We didn't know how long Ukraine could hold. We didn't know anything. And now that we're several months into this, we kind of know what we're doing and we know what to expect and we know what different warnings mean and what, like, when the news says this, we actually know what those words mean, whereas early on we didn't. So that's what's changed, you know, a lot. We have more understanding of what our reality is living here. But yeah, it's changed so much about Ukraine. And even at the orphanage, I mean, we see so many more children there now than we did before. I would say, gosh, I mean, when I first got here, we weren't seeing like a ton of new kids coming in. Even in my like trips that I've been here in the past, like you'd see like some turnover of children coming in and children leaving. But in those, I don't know, like 6 months after the invasion started, we were seeing a really high increase of children coming in to the orphanage. And I don't know what all of those situations were. Some of them were children that had evacuated from other regions and were getting moved to our region.
In other orphanages?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So at the orphanage where I work at specifically, we have like 40 children that came from another orphanage in the east that came over with their caregivers and are staying here and have been here since like March. So yeah, we've definitely seen the impact that it's having just like on the everyday operations of an orphanage. But it's also, it's with everything here. I don't think you could look out in the world, you know, in Ukraine and see something that hasn't been touched by this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I it's hard to, as you know, it's like being American, it's hard to, for us to say, oh, we get it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's people listening feel so disconnected that your content, your advocacy is a part of how they can understand what's really happening too, because so many people are terrified that, oh my gosh, she's going to lose Wi-Fi. Like, what happens if she loses the Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
You know, like, I just looked up on Twitter before I spoke to you and it said that, I guess there's martial law in effect now or something. I mean, are you guys constantly aware of what's happening?
Yeah, we've had martial law here since the beginning, but what did happen today is they effected martial law in the annexed regions of Ukraine. So yeah, like every time that there's like a shift of movement. We have this, I didn't know about this when I lived in the States until I moved to Europe, but we have this app called Telegram and you can join all these Telegram channels. And it is like, we get news like this, like as soon as missiles are going off, as soon as drones are flying over, as soon as any of this is happening, your Telegram channel is like blowing up and it's like live updates of what's going on, which is like both helpful and not.
Yes.
It can be very chaotic and it can be really tough. Mm-hmm. So you've got to know that's something you've got to balance, right? Like, how much of this am I going to intake? How mm-hmm. much do I need to know in order to stay aware and stay wise and stay safe? Mm-hmm. But how much can I also distance myself so I can also stay sane and stay safe.
Well, do you have an exit strategy?
I own a car, so I'll just...
You're going to drive to... Can you take 35 kids with your car?
I could fit probably about 12 if I squeeze them.
Let's do it. Alina, she's Kim Possible. Okay, so she can do anything.
It's really funny, though, because we joke about this, but when the invasion first started, I didn't own my car yet. I didn't buy my car until like maybe 3 or 4 weeks after the invasion started. But when the invasion started, my friend, who I work very closely with, who runs Shade for Children, he has a minivan. And we were like legitimately discussing, like, okay, if they're going to come this far, because we live in the West, we've got a mountain range basically between us and where the on-the-ground war is happening over in the East. So we're like, okay, if they start coming over the mountain range, how many kids do we think we can fit in here? And I was like, do you think we can get more vehicles? Can we get more vans? And like, this was legitimate problem solving that we were doing in the early weeks. And that sounds insane, because if we were to go just like pick up these children and try to drive them into Europe, that is human trafficking. Like, that's what that is. But we were so desperate. Like, we were so, like, it felt like that could be a reality for us, that we were actually problem solving that. And I think I have to kind of joke about it now in order to like keep myself in a lighthearted frame of mind. But I also, like, with everything that's happening in the East with the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, like, I have like a plan in case nuclear fallout happens, because it would take about 24 to 48 hours for any type of nuclear fallout to reach my region. And so I know what I'm going to do if that's the case. Like, why do I have to have that? I don't, like, it's mind boggling that that's my reality, but this is the world I live in. So that's what we do.
So how are you then maintaining that joy? You know, I don't mean to bring you down by having this conversation with you. It's super educational for a lot of people. We'll talk about how they can help.
It's reality. So I don't really mind talking about it. So.
Okay. That's good to live in reality. I think then it is also a balance of how do you live with reality, but with joy at the same time. So what's joyful mm-hmm. for you? What is mm-hmm. making you smile and laugh? Is it Netflix? Is it whatever? Like, what's making you stay Alina?
I think I remember in the early weeks, I guess this conversation is going again full circle, is I really started numbing myself in a lot of ways. I think because my adrenaline was just pumping so high and I was just running off of that like emotions weren't hitting me for many, many weeks. And I remember I actually compared myself to a numb foot in an Instagram caption, because I felt like, you know, when you sit on your leg for a while and your foot goes numb and then you stand up and then it's all prickly. The moment I started feeling my emotions again, I felt like that prickly foot, where I was like, okay, I know I'm getting my feeling back and I know this is going to be good in a minute, but like right now this feels really icky and I'm all prickly. And that's what it felt like maybe like May, when I was like really starting to let kind of all the emotions come back. And I think honestly, like, it was just the grace of God that I was able to hold on to hope. I truly believed from the beginning of all of this that it was going to end in victory for Ukraine. And I haven't lost faith in that. And so being able to have something to look forward to, and it is Ukraine's victory that we're looking forward to, I think that really keeps me grounded from spiraling. But yeah, I also have like so many coping mechanisms. I listen to so much music. Like, when I can't deal with my own thoughts, I have music blaring in my ears. I have
Who are you listening to?
In my apartment at all times. Well, good. Taylor Swift releases Midnights this week, so yeah. You best believe I am blasting.
She's gonna have a
T-Swift
red scarf
throughout my apartment
and a tea, and you're gonna go into those fall leaves that you said you
am
have.
Am I not giving like Midnights era vibes with my
oh definitely?
My shirt, and I painted
I think
my
look
nails
great.
Midnight.
I love it. So you're a Swiftie. Got it. Check.
Oh, 1,000%.
Oh my God, Taylor
so
needs
she's
to like meet
helped
you.
Me get through.
Taylor, Alina needs an autograph.
I actually am going to get an autograph because I purchased one
oh,
from
good.
her signed vinyl collection that she released.
Oh man, that's awesome.
Yeah, I have a lot of music going at all times. And with the kids too. We listen to stuff, like I turn on music all the time when I'm with them. It's such a healing like mechanism.
Yeah, language.
Music.
Language, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a language that you don't need to necessarily understand and whatnot.
I also bought, I have a projector for my apartment, like one of those movie projectors, so I can turn my apartment into a movie theater, and that has like saved the day so many times. And I can just like project a whole movie on my wall and just curl up, you know, with a blanket on my couch. That saves the day a lot.
Do you, as a sort of an expat, do you miss the States? Do you miss your mom?
I miss my mom all the time.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I miss the States. There's comforts of the States that I miss.
Sure.
I just feel like my heart was made for Europe. This place feels more like home than anywhere. And I've lived all over the States. I've lived in like 5 different states. And this place feels more like home. But yeah, I miss my mom. I miss Chick-fil-A. I miss Target. I miss Amazon, being able to have Amazon, you know, shipped to me in 3 days. But I don't envision myself necessarily going back anytime soon, though.
Oh, so how can everyone help you? Not you, but the you with all of you. How can we help?
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I think where I need the help the most right now is just like continue spreading the word and talking about what's going on here. So I try to stay really active on my Instagram and my TikTok, which is the same handle for both. It's at Alina K, AllinaKay. I try to share as much information on there as I can regarding Ukraine, how the war is progressing, because I know as difficult as it is to follow that information, it is so important that people don't forget, because Ukraine as a country, as a people group, are still relying very heavily on the aid of other countries in order to survive, especially with winter coming up. It's going to be an incredibly difficult time here. And so just continuing to spread that message and keeping it on the forefront of people's minds, because we are, whether we like it or not, conditioned to just move on past things so quickly. And I'm seeing that, and it's hard because I get it, I understand, but I also have just taken it upon myself to try to keep whatever sphere of influence I have in the know and caring about it. And then as things continue to move forward and as Ukraine continues to take back their land, like my prayer, my hope is that we do get real reform in the orphan care system. And as Ukraine's rebuilding their cities, they're also rebuilding this system. Okay. And that's going to need a lot of voices and a lot of momentum behind it to really get that going. So I'm going to keep talking about it until it lands on the right ears and something happens. But just helping keep that message alive.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All that matters is the kids. At the end of the day, that's all that matters. And I feel like so many people can understand that, and they don't have to speak the same language. They don't have to be from the same background. All that matters is the kids and that joy that we were talking about.
They literally are the most vulnerable. Like, they're the most vulnerable that we are ever at in life. Like, they have no one. And, like, they are the victims, for good or for worse, of the decisions of the adults around them. And so if we're not going to make decisions that are in the best interest of these children, then, like, we are ruining an entire generation. Like, we are losing them. And the statistics around what happens to these children, it's terrifying. It really is.
What can we do with the winter coming? I guess I'm kind of concerned about that as a mom. I'm like, can we send firewood? Can we send, you know, blankets? Mm-hmm. Do you have a link? Do you have a Cash App? Is there something that we can do to donate?
Yeah, on my, like the accounts that I just shared, I have a link. I accept donations. All of it's through a nonprofit in the States that partners with me. So it's all 501c3, you know, tax deductible donations. And that money does get directly to me, where I can direct it here on the ground. And I will just say, there are so many people here on the ground that are receiving money from, like, outside of Ukraine. And my encouragement would be, like, get the money. Like, if you want to help financially, like, get the money in those people's hands, because we can immediately get it where it needs to be here on the ground. Whereas with some of the bigger organizations, there's just so much bureaucracy with it that it kind of actually takes a long time for that aid to get on the ground to where it's needed. So yeah, here we're expecting to be supporting a handful of at-risk families here in my region, with things like firewood, clothing, food, to get through the winter. And then we're also I still help fund multiple evacuations out of the East, especially in the areas where they're completely cut off from gas and water. so that they can get into places where they're going to have access to stay safe throughout the winter. But yeah, I have a link. Thank you so much for asking. I have a link on my Instagram, on my TikTok, on anything else that I am connected to for donations. It's through an organization called The Cause, and they support me as a nonprofit.
Awesome. Alina, thank you so much for everything that you do. Please stay safe.
Thanks. I really appreciate it.
Please hug as many babies and send them my love. Maybe show them some Kim Possible. I'll do whatever it takes. I will learn a different language. I will learn a different language.
I wonder if I could get that. I show them English cartoons all the time and they still absolutely love it. I'm actually convinced that the kids I work with are going to be bilingual because I speak to them in English when I don't know the Ukrainian. I'm like, this is going to work out for you.
You know, yeah, no, I guess what, but 2 years old, 2 years old are too young still. I have a 3 and a 5 year old, and my 5 year old is starting to get curious about it, but we don't push anything on anybody, but, but thank you for being an amazing human being. The world needs people like yourself and also all the other people that are helping, you know, that are down there.
There's so many people that have just come in droves to help, and it's been incredible to see. It, like, you see the worst and the best of society and humanity in these situations. So,
okay. Well, I love you.
I love you too.
Stay soft and resilient.
Yes, amen.
And stay safe. And thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Christy. I really appreciate it.
Vulnerable is hosted by me, Christy Carlson Romano, produced by Elizabeth Joy Windham, and executive produced by Brendan Rooney. Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham, and our video editor is Eduardo Gamba. Follow Vulnerable wherever you listen to podcasts so you can join me every week for a vulnerable conversation. And be sure to follow Vulnerable on Instagram and TikTok @TheVulnerablePodcast. And make sure to tune in to my YouTube to watch the video version.